I hope they're dry from yesterday, Anya. I don't know about it. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I feel like I've been away forever and ever, and I have to give a shout out to everybody at Civic Media who's been so generous with their time and skill to help cover for me while I've been gone, especially yesterday. Walking out the door, fell down the stairs about 16 minutes before I was supposed to go on live radio. That's always fun. But I'm here sitting. Usually I stand when I do this. But sitting today with the leg lofted, there's been two things that have been like burning for me to talk about, just boiling over of importance here in the state of Wisconsin. And both have to do with a lot of legal technicalities. And if that ain't Maggie Dawn material, I do not know what is. So I want to tell you what they both are. I also will get to the question of the Iowa model and the proposal from Wisconsin Republicans to change how we redistrict later this week or early next. But today, if we can get through both of them, I want to talk about two things. The first is explain how it is that Planned Parenthood is open and helping women access healthcare and to control their lives. And I want to explain to you the technical things that the decision that paved the way for Planned Parenthood to reopen, despite the fact that a law that was passed in 1849 remains on the books. And that's weird, right? There wasn't some injunction preventing enforcement of the law, and yet Planned Parenthood reopened. So I'm going to explain that to you. The second thing we're going to get to today, probably starting at the bottom of the hour, is what the heck is going on with the Elections Commission director? And like, we all get that the Senate's trying to fire her, but maybe they don't have the power to do that. And there was this other state Supreme Court decision about some other appointee, and how does all of that work and what's going on with it? Get your questions ready. If you have questions about these two things, because they do these decisions and where we sit today all spring from technical, very, very frankly, kind of complicated legal interpretations. And that's not what gets explained when you watch the local news, right? Like, there's no time for that. So what are your questions about either of these things? Planned Parenthood has returned to giving a full panoply of services, of healthcare services to women so that they can control their healthcare. That's topic one. What are your questions about that? I also want to know, how do you feel about that? When you heard the news that Planned Parenthood was going to start again providing abortions, what was the feeling that that elicited in you? 844-967-2789, because I had a whole flood of them. But also just, what are your questions? I'm here to try to help us collectively understand some of this technical legal stuff and to help understand how people who don't have a legal background react to news that is really about very, very complicated rules of statutory and case law interpretation. And what is your, you know, impression of the complete circus that has surrounded the elections director for the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which should be a nonpartisan organization led by a nonpartisan, right? And yet here we've devolved into clearly partisan bickering as we ramp up for one of the most important election years that we've seen, right? Probably more important, I've made the argument, than 2020, because Donald Trump now has his list of sycophants, butt kissers, do nothing, treason inducing, co-conspirators. That list is all ready to go day one. So 844-967-2789. You can also text us per usual. Anya and I will do our darndest if you want to send in your questions about either of these two things. We're going to try to queue them up, and I'll try to get through all of them today. But you can, of course, join us live, 844-967-2789. Let's start with this. How did you feel? What was your emotional reaction when you heard that Planned Parenthood just yesterday began and did provide abortion services to women in the state of Wisconsin? Because I'll tell you what I thought and felt when I saw that headline last week. They had announced it before actually providing those services yesterday. And I thought, wow. And oh my goodness, there are women whose lives will be forever changed because they can make a choice. And the as I continued to think on that, the odds are that those are women who can only access abortion if it's local, meaning people who don't have flexible job hours and don't have the means to travel out of state. And I was extremely moved and humbled by the fact that I have never had to make that choice. And I still remain absolutely stunned by the arrogance of conviction and your own personal religious beliefs supplanting someone else's most deeply private personal choices. I can't get over that. And it's interesting because in analyzing the court decision that paved the way for Planned Parenthood in Wisconsin to begin again providing abortions to women in Wisconsin, in between all of the legal technicalities and these nuanced interpretations, roared an unassailable truth about this question. And it's an unassailable truth that I think no matter what your personal, religious, or faith-based views about abortion may be, this unassailable truth that to me, again, roars from the pages of this decision and is so clearly the center of every debate that you will not be able to dispute that truth. And I will get to it as we discuss how we got here in Wisconsin. So let's just set the stage again. Abortions up until last week had not been provided in the state of Wisconsin for more than a year. That was following the Supreme Court's decision that overturned Roe v. Wade, now known as the Dobbs decision. I have spent many an hour on the radio criticizing it, but my criticism in large part is this. At the root of the Dobbs decision, it runs for nearly 70 pages, was this definition of how we understand privacy rights today. And this was Samuel Alito writing for the Supreme Court's majority. He basically said, listen, if it's not a right that is clearly necessary and essential to the functioning of democracy, as understood back in the 1700s, maybe the early 1800s, it's not a privacy right this court will acknowledge. And while we can all maybe technically understand what that is, or what that might mean, here's what it means in real people talk. It means that the rights of women and people of color and other groups who have not had equal access to the rights and privileges enjoyed by white men who are landowners, that those rights that are essential to our identity, yes, our identity as women or the LGBTQ community or as brown or black people, that these attributes, that it's okay to have different sets of rules about them because old white guys that had land back in the 1700s and 1800s didn't acknowledge those rights. It's a circular argument that the rights that we will enjoy today will be defined by the rights that different people who aren't female, LGBTQ, or brown or black decided back then. It just doesn't. What? Okay, so it's been a year, and the Attorney General has filed a lawsuit that alleges that effectively the laws on Wisconsin's books are inconsistent as it pertains to abortion. Specifically, that there was a set of laws adopted in 1985 following Roe v. Wade, when it was acknowledged by our nation's highest court that that is a privacy right, that women must have access to abortion so long as it is an abortion. Basically, they adopted the viability rule. If the fetus isn't isn't yet viable, then women have a right to abortion. So the laws adopted in 1985 for Wisconsin all were built around this concept of a viability rule, fetal viability. And so they contemplate access to abortion. The problem is that the laws, that they never removed the laws from 1849 off the books. So they're not even consistent really in concept. And then when you go to read the laws of 1849 in the state of Wisconsin, well, hey, Anya, I got an easy question for you.
Oh, no, I'm never good at even the easy questions, but go ahead.
No, you got this one. Hey, Anya, do you think medical terminology back in 1849 is exactly as precise and technical as the medical terminology we use today?
Well, I'll answer that with a short anecdote, which is that my grandmother, who I love, Mildred, worked with special needs kids, and I know that even medical terminology back then wasn't very accurate. So I can only imagine what it was like in, what is it, 1840 what?
1849.
Wow, yeah, no, I can't imagine it's very good.
Yeah, the pinnacle of clarity and understandability, it is not. So we've got these laws from 1985, the laws from 1849. They're not really compatible with one another. And so within the course of the Attorney General's lawsuit came this question, which he didn't directly ask the court who's hearing the lawsuit. And that is, what exactly does the 1849 law ban? And spoiler alert, the judge decided that that law does not, in fact, ban abortion. I'm going to explain to you how the judge got there and the unassailable truth that exists in this debate. I'm Maggie Dawn. We'll be back with more in a moment on The Maggie Dawn Show. Welcome back, everybody. I'm limping Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can always get the app from your favorite app store, listen to us perfectly clear, and text or join our shows with one click on the app. We're hearing from our text line. Thank you, Carmela. It's nice to hear from you. I'm very happy to be back. Yes, Crudy did an amazing job covering for me. And Carmela also shares with all of us that she was happy and relieved for women who need this service, but like many of us, probably a little surprised and curious as to how exactly any of this is legally possible. So let's get there, okay? So this decision came from a Dane County Circuit Court judge. It was dated July 17th. So keep in mind, like, Planned Parenthood clearly talked about this for over 2 months, basically figuring out, okay, a judge has maybe opened the door to us offering abortion services again. And I wanted to read you portions of this. Don't worry, I'm not going to do too much reading. But the court sets this up and explains what I just did, that Wisconsin developed a comprehensive system for regulating abortions based on the Supreme Court's viability rule, and basically said women get abortions pre-fetal viability, and here's, you know, these consent rules and licensure and hospital rights, blah, blah, blah. All the technicalities, okay? And they also said that post-viability abortions are legal under a certain set of basically extenuating health-related circumstances. Now, what's at issue is the 1849 law. So we know that the 1985 laws just dealt with regulating abortion, and all of those statutory sections just presume that pre-viability abortions are legal and are available. However, the section that is the challenge, okay, is Wisconsin State Statute Section 940-940.04, right? The 1985 and later laws, those are all under 940.15. Okay, here's what 940 sub 04 sub 1 says. Any person other than the mother who intentionally destroys the life of an unborn child is guilty of a Class H felony. Here's what subsection 2 says. Any person other than the mother who intentionally destroys the life of an unborn quick child is guilty of a Class E felony. Okay, so what does that mean? What exactly does that state statute section mean? Now, unsurprisingly, the Dane County Circuit Court wasn't the first court to have to confront this question in the state of Wisconsin. Perhaps for pro-lifers in the state, they maybe should have paid attention to the prior state Supreme Court ruling that interpreted this 1849 law. And here's what the Dane County judge ended up finding back at the beginning of July. The first thing that the court did was basically line these statutes up. The one that uses reference to an unborn child versus the one that makes reference to an unborn quick child and applies different felony penalties based on that distinction. The court said, okay, do we have any court case here in Wisconsin that interpreted this? And we do. The case is State versus Black, and it's not from all that long ago. It's from 1994. And in State versus Black, a man was criminally charged under the second subsection, so the one that deals with a quick child, okay? And that one carries a heavier penalty. This man assaulted a woman, grabbed her by the hair, pulled her backward onto the sofa, punched her in the abdomen twice. He refused to allow her to call for help. And by the way, this was his wife. For 15 minutes until she started screaming from abdominal pain, and it goes on. It's quite graphic. The fetus died, and it was at full term. The mother was full term, and literally just waiting on the kid to start birthing. And in the Black decision, in interpreting this state law, said that this state law relating to a quick child could hardly be clearer. The statute prohibits feticide. Well, what is feticide? Feticide has a technical legal definition. And without reading it to you, I'll just tell you what it means. It means when you go beat up a woman intentionally and she's pregnant and the fetus dies. Exactly the facts in the Black case. She was full term. There was nothing wrong with the baby as far as they could tell. He beat the crap out of her, intentionally punched her in the stomach twice, and her child died. Her unborn child, her unborn quick child died. So the question then becomes, if that's, and by the way, feticide is not abortion. Abortion is a woman electing to have a medical procedure. It's not someone battering a woman without her consent and thereby killing the child. So when I get back, I knew this would take me more than two segments on. When I come back, I'll explain to you how the judge then viewed and interpreted the conclusion by the Wisconsin Supreme Court in 1994 that provision of the 1849 law is not about abortion, that it's about feticide, when I come back. Please keep it locked in. It all matters. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can, of course, join us 844-967-2789.
talking in my sleep at night, making myself crazy.
Out of my mind, out of my mind.
Wrote it down and read it out, hoping it would save me.
Back, everybody. So how did you feel when you heard that Planned Parenthood in Wisconsin, beginning yesterday, was providing abortions again, both its Milwaukee location and its Dane County location? How did that hit you? 844-967-2789. I was shocked. Had to read the headline a couple of times. Like, how did we get here? And that started me down this whole analysis. Because I'll tell you what, when this decision dropped from this Dane County judge in July, the main headline was the lawsuit brought by Josh Call to challenge the laws and to get some clarity here was going to be allowed to continue. And there was some coverage that the judge drew into question whether or not, in fact, the 1849 law was a law making abortion illegal. Okay. To get back to where we were, suffice it to say, none of the press at that time went, holy cow, abortion's actually legal in Wisconsin, and everybody got it wrong. Like, that didn't happen. But now it has. Hence why I'm here today to share with you, friends, what the legal technicalities here are. So what I've been sharing with you is the language of the 1840 law, which said any person in two different subsections. Subsection one says any person other than the mother who intentionally destroys the life of an unborn child is guilty of a class H felony. Subsection two says exactly the same thing, except destroys the life of an unborn quick child is guilty of a class E felony. So the difference between quick and not quick is basically fetal viability. It was the nomenclature of that time scientifically. Okay, so basically you beat up a woman and a non-viable fetus dies. It's a felony in Wisconsin. You beat up a woman and a viable fetus dies. That's a higher graded felony in the state of Wisconsin. And the judge from Dane County pointed out, by the way, in 1994, the court declared that the subsection 2 about the unborn quick child, that this is not an abortion statute. This is a feticide statute. And feticide is someone causing, assaulting without consent, a woman who is pregnant and causing the loss of her fetus as a result of their assault. It's not an abortion statute. The Dane County judge didn't come up with this. The state Supreme Court did in 1994. And then the Dane County judge says the constructions of the statutes are exactly identical. So there is no abortion ban in Wisconsin because the 1849 law bans feticide, the intentional assault or battery of a woman that then kills her fetus. Either viable or unviable. That's what the law says. Now, interesting side note, that section of Wisconsin state statute is titled abortion, which, remember, I promised you that in this entire discussion is one unassailable truth. Keep that in mind, that it's titled abortion, but the thing that it describes isn't an abortion. They describe what is legally defined as feticide. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court so held in 1994. The judge goes on to make a big point about this, that the legislature has known this since 1994. And that if the legislature doesn't like a court's interpretation, courts can presume they know well of what the court said about something, and that the legislature chose not to act, thus lent to amend or clarify the laws, and thus that Supreme Court decision stands. So she basically, the Dane court judge is like, yes, Republicans, remember when you got sort of change the rules on how Supreme Court justices get nominated because you didn't like Barack Obama's last appointee when Scalia died, and you threw out all of our democratic norms before Trump was even actually a thing. Remember when you did that and you loaded up the Supreme Court with people that really don't have any alignment to what the majority of Americans think on some of these big issues? Remember that? Yeah. You knew what they were eventually going to say, and you did nothing for a few years to clarify this law that said that abortion actually, per the Supreme Court in Wisconsin in 1994, abortion isn't illegal in Wisconsin. It's a feticide law. So that is a big deal. She then points this out, and this is the kicker, everybody. When I saw this in this decision, I went, you've got to be kidding me. When confronted with these arguments during the hearing, okay, the lawyers representing the people that are arguing that it actually is an abortion ban, and for some technical reasons that I'm not going to get into right now, it's a district attorney, because district attorneys are the ones who would criminally prosecute people for violating these laws. So Josh Call is suing a district attorney. Well, there, I did it. Very, very succinctly. The lawyer representing the district attorney defendant tried to argue, no, that's not right. That's not really what the Black decision meant. But had to write the court later and correct themselves and have admitted on the record that indeed that is precisely what the Black decision in 1994 meant. And I quote, from the Dane County Court's decision, the district attorney's attorney, quote, clarified that Black could not support application of the 1849 law to consensual abortions. And she quotes his letter to her. Okay, these are the anti-abortion people writing about the 1849 law to the Dane County Court judge that's hearing the challenge to the 1849 law. Okay, everybody with me here? The anti-abortion lawyer writes this about the purported Wisconsin 1849 abortion ban law. During oral argument, I suggested that based on footnote 2 in the Black decision, the decision could be read as saying that the 1849 law could apply to both consensual abortions and feticide. As a clarification, I am acknowledging that in Black, our Supreme Court stated that the 1849 law is, quote, not an abortion statute and is a feticide statute only, end quote. That's from the anti-abortion lawyer, admitting on the record in the Josh Call case that the 1849 law is not an abortion ban. Bonk, like mic drop, are we done here now? So that's why. Okay, and the judge goes on and goes through some principles of statutory construction. And then she summarizes it. I love it. This is a practical jurist. I don't know who this is, but bravo. She said basically, like, to summarize, there's four reasons why there's no abortion ban. First of all, Black said that this is a feticide case, that this is not an abortion case. Second, Black said that we must disregard the title of the statute. By the way, that's a rule of statutory construction. You can call something a duck, but if it's scaly and slithers, it doesn't matter what you've called it. It's still a snake. Third, the judge said, Black specifically also said that the 1849 law is not an abortion statute. And fourth and finally, the Black court again rephrased that it is a feticide statute only. She was basically sussing out some of the technical points here. I mean, here's the conclusion. July 7th, just this year, from the Dane County Circuit Court. In sum, reasonable people may fairly debate whether the ordinary and everyday usage of the word feticide encompasses consensual medical abortions. But there can be no similar debate about what State v. Black meant when it used that word. The 1849 law is a feticide statute only, and feticide does not mean abortion. For the above reason, the meaning of feticide is not ambiguous, and the 1849 law does not prohibit a consensual medical abortion. And yet, with that amount of clarity, it took 2 months before abortions resumed in the state of Wisconsin. And here's where we get to the unassailable truth part. Every attempt to regulate abortion, including this failed one in 1849, and I mean regulate abortion out of existence. And now every attempt that's being made by Republicans who for decades said that there should be a national abortion ban are now trying to sort of moderate off that position. And there's plenty of them. Not all of them are as politically stupid as Mike Pence. Okay. Here's what they try to, they're now trying to factually describe the circumstances under which an abortion is permissible. Life of the mother, well, life of the mother, according to whom? How many doctors have to say that in Wisconsin? It's 3, by the way. And it gets into these questions of, well, like, does she have to be in preeclampsia? Like, what, how, wait a minute, how almost septic is she? Right? Like, this is what we're talking about. What the judge said there, you lay people don't know what feticide versus abortion means. You could read that statute and go, yeah, it bans abortion, but it doesn't. So says the Wisconsin Supreme Court in 1994, leaving, let's see, should we do math on the radio, Anya? Let's see. The Dobbs decision came out in 2022, and that Supreme Court decision was 1994. They had 28 years to clarify that the 1849 law actually banned abortions. But they didn't do that. Why didn't they do that? Because they pretty much knew it was unpopular, and the Supreme Court and everyone had assumed that that would be a right enshrined in Supreme Court jurisprudence forever. So the unassailable truth part is this. Feticide versus abortion. Abortion if her life is in danger, but decided by whom and under what factual circumstances? Well, how at risk does the woman have to get? How many doctors do we have to ask? What hospital privileges for whom and by what distance according to... When you get to a point where you can't legislate it, you shouldn't legislate it. When the legislation walks us all into factual absurdities that are facially so disgusting and so hurtful to people that even the most ardent pro-life advocate would take pause, and there are so many of these, it indicates that this is not a proper area for legislation, that it is indeed essential to our democracy that women have autonomy over their bodies in this way, because you can't figure out exactly how to say it. And at the root of all of that is that you're a slut. And that I live in a puritanical Christian democracy. Oh, wait, that's not what the United States is or ever was. We are a secular democracy, and your mores, your values, your faith tradition has no business in my body, least of which has no business in my body when your religious beliefs take my life. The absurdity of these laws indicate that this is not a place for legislation. And the absurdity of the fact that that was just admitted a month ago by the pro-life lawyer tells us this is not a place for legislation or criminality. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Tell me what you thought when you heard that Planned Parenthood was finally again delivering healthcare to women in Milwaukee and the state of Wisconsin when we come back.
good stuff. Two minute break.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn, and this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you want to share your view, your thoughts, your feelings about how you responded, your gut reaction, what you thought upon reflection about Planned Parenthood providing abortions beginning yesterday, again, in the state of Wisconsin, join our conversation, 844-967-2789. I'm especially interested in hearing, frankly, any time this week from folks that may be personally pro-life, but understand that is not what should prevail in our legal realm, that abortion must remain legal. Just a couple of shouts out. Mike in Madison, thanks much for listening. Our texting haiku author, also always fun to hear from you. Again, you can join us 844-967-2789. So I'm going to save the conversation about Megan Wolf and the elections directorship and the technical legal stuff for tomorrow because I don't want to blast through it. There's a lot going on there. So do tune in tomorrow. I will break down the entire situation there. I will also tell you what I think the right outcome in that case is. And what I thought about the Supreme Court's decision when it was about Fred Preen, who is this DNR commissioner who basically refused to step down even when Tony Evers had appointed someone new. He was a holdover from the Walker administration, and the state Senate just refused to hold a confirmation hearing for the new person who was appointed. So I'll tell you what I thought about that decision, what I think about the situation here, and how they're similar, and also what the technical interpretation of state statutes betwixt the 1849 abortion law and the Wisconsin elections director thing have to do with one another, and why it's so important that judges aren't partisans. I will break all that down for you tomorrow. But I'd like to reemphasize this point that I made last segment, that when you look at abortion laws, unless they are just complete bans, and even that has a hard time operating, as we just discovered, because the 1849 law that's supposed to be an abortion ban is an abortion ban, is not an abortion ban, is that you end up with mess. It's impossible to legislate this in a defensible, consistent manner that frankly comports with the moralistic and religious underpinnings of the arguments that people make on the pro-life side of things. It's inoperable. And the fact that the law is inoperable tells us this isn't a place where the state should be treading. And I'd respectfully like to offer you that a similar set of almost equally, if not more horrendous circumstances that I hear a deafening silence from the right and Christian and evangelicals is when it comes to the state killing people in executions to show that killing people is wrong. And just today, reporting is coming out in more forceful amounts, but the return to executions in Alabama, that conservative governor, Kate Ivey, so conservative, he way right. She even put a moratorium on executions because like three or four of them were screwed up in the last 5 years in Alabama. I mean, badly. People surviving executions, people terribly harmed, botched executions. That now Alabama, she's lifted the moratorium and now they're going to kill people, I think, by putting a gas mask of nitrogen over their faces. And by the way, veterinarians won't use that same method to kill your cat or dog. And so this is, again, one of those areas when you're like, yeah, death penalty. Tell me how you do that humanely. Tell me how you do that. Because you can't. Don't tell me lining people up at a fire in front of a firing squad is humane. It's not. That's why we don't do it. But ask me this. Why do we never know who's the executioner? Why do doctors refuse to do this? Why have, frankly, chemical companies and pharmaceutical companies refuse to produce and manufacture the component ingredients or drugs that they've used in the drug cocktails for the lethal injections, so that now Alabama is about to use a method to kill people, to teach people that killing people is wrong, that vets won't even use to put down dogs or cats? It's impossible to do that with any degree of humanity, or in a way that would comport with the moral underpinnings of those that make the argument for pro-life in the first place. I would like to offer to all of us that your arguments about morality and standards and who says what and who gets to, you had better be consistent. There had better be a through line. Because Miss Boebert and those of her ilk, how dare you tell America what their values should be? Because your standards are not consistent. And we needn't look to your own abhorrent, repugnant personal behavior. We need only look to the positions you take on these kinds of policies. They are simply inconsistent. And I think we need to ask ourselves for more of that consistency. If you listen to me break down how stupid the arguments about Justice Protasiewicz are, the whole point there was consistency. There is none in the GOP. You can't find it anymore. And that's where we should begin. What are your values? And do you apply those value standards consistently? Because if you don't, why don't you pack your bags? I'm Maggie Dawn. It's so good to be back. I will talk to you tomorrow. But a couple of programming notes. This Thursday, you don't want to miss it. I'm going to have my good friend Colleen Foley, the head of the Legal Aid Society of Milwaukee. And mark your calendars. October 2nd, it's going to be a breakdown of all things Brewer and Stadium with my good friend and sports expert, Matt Salmon. Thanks all for listening. I'll be back with more tomorrow.
Great stuff. Great.